What does the teacher look like to the person being led by the pedagogue? What are the characteristics of the teacher's life and world? Anyone living under the benefit of a holy community which follows the Torah will receive a more complete description of the teacher. His mind will be preserved from inaccuracies and false images of what the teacher looks like. He will be given accurate information and revelation of the teacher, the Messiah. Furthermore, the person on the way to the teacher will be given a more accurate description of what life is with the teacher. He will know what he is missing until that life becomes his, until he ceases to be merely under the benefits of the holy community and becomes an integral member of that community by sharing in the life of the teacher, the Messiah himself. Protection for the redeemed. If the Torah helps protect the lives of those not yet part of the redeemed community, how much more is it a safeguard for God's holy ones, those who believe? The Mishpatim, Mitzvot, Chukim, and Torot function as a protective border for the people of God. This is illustrated in the diagrams enclosed in your audio cassette. For our purposes, the pictures represent what are generally accepted as the original, God-intended borders of the theocracy of ancient Israel, functioning as a light to the nations around her, Deuteronomy chapter 4, verses 5 through 8. The pictures also depict the two spiritual realities of the universe, the kingdom of light, God's kingdom, and the kingdom of darkness, Satan's kingdom. Close study of Romans chapter 5, verses 12 through 21 will reveal the details of these two kingdoms. The ruling power of the kingdom of light is life. The ruling power of the kingdom of darkness is death. It is important to remember that these two kingdoms exist whether man acknowledges them or not. They are part of the fundamental spiritual realities of the universe. If such an important reality as the kingdom of darkness exists, it is critical that we know where the boundaries of such a kingdom are located, in order that we might avoid participating in that kingdom. By the kindness, grace, and mercy of God, He has described for us exactly where the boundaries between these two opposite and diametrically opposed kingdoms lie. They are identified for us in the Torah, as well as its divinely inspired commentary, the Brit Chadasha. Moreover, the Torah is itself a boundary. Let us take this two-kingdom concept one step further. That which is not of the kingdom of light and life is death, and therefore unclean for us. In other words, what we must not touch nor eat of. These pictorial concepts teach us not to partake of nor participate in death, the kingdom of darkness. Such activities can only bring the fruit of death into our lives. Because the Torah tells us the truth, the difference between holy and unholy, clean and unclean, life and death, it is both a protection for us and a written revelation of the grace of God. Every man, woman, or child who chooses not to live within the teachings of God, which produce life, is consigned to a place outside of the blessing and protection established by these teachings. Remember Deuteronomy 30, verses 19 and 20. With this in mind, we can now begin to understand some of the more seemingly peculiar teachings of Torah, especially the so-called legal sections, having to do with a theocracy of the kingdom of light. We can also tie in the description of the Torah as the national covenant and constitution, in which the great king promises to protect his subjects through the covenant, see chapter 1. To protect them from what? From the kingdom outside of his kingdom, the kingdom of darkness. Remember that the chief characteristic of the kingdom of darkness is death, with all of its legal rights. The legal aspect of the Torah declare the truth that the kingdom of darkness has no jurisdiction inside the boundaries of God's kingdom, the Torah community. The legal terminology of the Torah, which, in many circles, gives rise to the belief that the Torah is law instead of a revelation of God's grace, can now be more clearly understood. These commandments make no sense unless we view them as living Torah teaching pictures, designed both to remind us of the reality of the two kingdoms and to keep us from participating in the kingdom of darkness. Look now at the two diagrams included in the materials with your audio cassette. In Figure 1, we see a picture of the Kingdom of Light in the shape of the ancient theocracy of Israel. It is bordered by the actual words of the Torah. Outside those borders is the Kingdom of Darkness. Please note that this diagram is not meant to imply that the nations outside of Israel are the Kingdom of Darkness. It is simply an illustration of the Torah's intended function as a protector. If we remain within the borders established by the teachings of Torah, we will enjoy our God-given inheritance and be protected from the influences of the idolatrous peoples around us. We will also serve as a light to those nations. This is also the reason behind the commands of Torah regarding those living in Israel who violate the Torah and must be put out of the community. One of the purposes of Israel was to be a place of safety, blessing, and teaching. When a person violated the sacred place, he had to be removed from it for the sake of the rest of the holy community until he either repented or was judged by God. Furthermore, this is also the reason that the alien, the non-Jewish person living among the inhabitants of the Holy Land, must live according to the Torah. For the sake of all those called to live in the land, no act of rebellion can be allowed to compromise its holiness. In Figure 2, we see that the teachings of the Torah establish the place, Hamakom, where believers can partake of and enjoy the blessings that the teachings establish. The statutes that God laid down for us, quote, are sweeter than honey and the honeycomb, and righteous altogether. By them your servant is warned, and in keeping them there is great reward. End of quote. Psalm 19, verses 10 and 11. The written Torah cannot and does not impart life. Galatians 3:21. The Torah community, created by obedience to the Torah, is the place where life reigns instead of death. It is the place of safety and teaching. Quote, the statutes you have laid down are righteous. They are fully trustworthy. End of quote. Psalm 119, verse 38. To close up, hem in, and close within a place. Galatians 3:23. What place? Ha makom, the place of blessing. By so doing, then, the Torah hits the mark of defining wherein lies the place of blessing and life. To enjoy the blessings. There is another sense in which Torah acts as the protector of the redeemed community. It helps the community to enjoy the benefits of their inheritance. To understand this concept, we need to examine how Shaul compares the two covenants, the one God made with Abraham in Genesis 12, and the one he made with Moshe in Exodus 19, often called the Torah, in Galatians 3:10 through 21. Shaul describes the covenant with Abraham as one in which God promises an inheritance to his people, which is intended to be received by faith. Notice the three elements: promise, inheritance, faith. The promise of an inheritance was given by the grace of God, and the expected covenant response was faith. This is clearly taught in Genesis 15. Here God promises the inheritance which Abraham was to receive by faith. In regard to the covenant with Moshe, Torah, Shaul first says in verse 12 that this is not a faith covenant. In other words, the expected covenant response was not faith, but obedience. Second, it was not a covenant of promise. It did not promise the inheritance, but merely protected the already redeemed people to enjoy and to participate in the blessings of the inheritance. Moreover, verse 17 specifically states that the covenant with Moshe did not do away with the covenant with Abraham, Instead, the two complement each other. Thomas McComiskey comments on the masterful interaction between these two covenants in his book, The Covenants of Promise. Quote, "Not only did the law covenant define and amplify the promise, but it served to protect and secure the promise as well. The protective function of the law is also apparent in the various legal stipulations. The health laws and the prohibitions against Canaanite practices served to preserve the nation and to maintain its solidarity. The law also served to define the terms of obedience for those whose faith was in the promise it perpetuated. The law is not the promise. It is a covenant distinct from the promise covenant. It establishes the conditions under which the terms of the promise could be maintained. The law did not give the inheritance. It served to provide the framework necessary for the people to maintain their relationship to it." End of quote. Hence, according to McComiskey, people were not saved by obeying the Torah, but by trusting in the promises of God. To participate in that eternal inheritance requires faith. But the Torah was given to the redeemed community, not an unsaved one, although there were unsaved people dwelling among the redeemed community, in order that the community could be maintained and protected. Obedience, therefore, is the required covenant response. Is this not what is taught in Galatians 3? Looking at Torah in this context will help us to see its purposes and limitations more clearly. Figure 3, provided on the insert with this audio cassette, will help summarize what we have been saying about the purpose of the Torah, especially as it is compared to the covenant with Abraham. Let us clarify something here. In ancient Israel, there were, in reality, two different kinds of people living in the same community. First and foremost were those who were not only physically redeemed from slavery in Egypt, but also redeemed from slavery to sin. These were the remnant, which has existed throughout all of Israel's history right down to this present age. This group, of unspecified number, were real believers who trusted in the Lord and His provision of atonement. For them, obedience to the Torah came out of, or because of, their faith. Their obedience did not earn them redemption, nor did it secure their relationship with God. It was simply a natural result of their faith, as we see in James chapter 2, verse 18. The second group, again of undetermined size, were part of the redeemed community by virtue of the fact that they lived among the others and were required to follow the laws of the community. These people were not partakers of the covenant with Abraham, nor of the covenant with Moshe. Although physically redeemed from slavery in Egypt, they did not trust in God for their righteousness. They adhered to some of the statutes of the Mosaic covenant, perhaps even bringing the required sacrifices. However, this was not evidence of faith and trust in God, but a show of compliance intended to secure the protection of living in the holy community. A person cannot appropriate the full blessings of the covenant with Moshe, the Torah, unless he first enters into the covenant with Abraham. The latter is done by faith and faith alone. The covenant of promise through Abraham gave Israel the physical promises. Not only are these physical promises a reality, they are also pictures of the spiritual relationship we have with God. Moreover, they are illustrative of the spiritual promises of inheritance obtained by all believers through faith in Yeshua. For those who trust God for the promises, the proper order for faith and obedience is set by the sequence in which the covenants were given. In other words, faith must precede obedience. But the kind of faith accepted by God is one which naturally flows into obedience. True obedience never comes before faith, nor is it an addition to faith. It is always the result of true biblical faith. To rephrase this in terms of the covenant of promise, Abraham, must come before the covenant of obedience, Moshe. If we were to put Moshe first, attempting to secure these promises by obedience, we would be going against God's order. This, by the way, is the key to unlocking the difficult midrash used by Shaul in Galatians 4, verses 21 through 31. All we could hope for would be a measure of physical protection and a knowledge of spiritual things, but we could never receive justification nor a personal relationship with the Holy One through obedience to the Torah. It all had to start with faith. Abraham came before Moshe, but Moshe did not cancel out Abraham. The two complemented each other as long as they came in the proper order. At this point, let us summarize what we have said about the protective nature of the Torah. The Torah serves as a protector on three levels. First, if obeyed, it protects the nation to enjoy its inheritance. Second, it protects the individual redeemed people within that nation to enjoy their own inheritance. They truly enjoy to the fullest their redemption because they understand and participate in the miracle of redemption as portrayed by the mitzvot of Torah. And third, the Torah protects those who do not yet know the teacher, Messiah, until the time God chooses to reveal himself to them. Chapter 3. The Torah, a Way of Life. As we have already seen, the Torah is not for those who are yet unregenerate. The only functions it serves for them is to point out their sin and subsequently to condemn them for it. However, the Bible does teach that the Torah is to be the way of life for the redeemed community. Deuteronomy 30, verses 14 and 15 comments on the Torah by saying, quote, "But the word is very near you, in your mouth and in your heart, that you may observe it. See, I have set before you today life and prosperity." End of quote. Jeremiah 31:33 again emphasizeth that for the believer, quote, "I shall put my Torah within them, and on their heart I will write it." End of quote. Psalm 119 is completely dedicated to the blessings of living according to the Torah. The Brit Chadashah is equally clear, as long as the reader adheres to the interpretive principles outlined above. As far as Shaul's writings are concerned, most, if not all, of his exhortations on everyday living, in Jewish thinking, his halakha, are based on the teachings from the Torah. Moreover, we need to consider what Yaakov, James, wrote to the Jewish believers in the diaspora. In his letter, he strongly urges them to follow Torah. Notice particularly what he says in James 1, verses 22 through 25. He likens the person who does not follow the word of God to someone who looks into a mirror, walks away, and forgets what he looks like. When the natural man looks into a literal mirror, he sees a reflection of his physical being. When a new creation in Messiah looks into the perfect Torah, Yaakov's language, he sees in its laws, decrees, commandments, judgments, and teachings a reflection of his new creation self. This brings us to our next characteristic of Torah. The Torah reflects God's holiness, goodness, and righteousness. Rav Shaul set out to teach that the failure of the Torah to produce justification arises from man's misuse of it, not from any deficiency in the teachings themselves. As he points out in Romans 7, verse 12, quote, "So then, the Torah is holy, and the command is holy, and righteous, and good." End of quote. We need to let ourselves feel the full impact of this verse. There are some who say that Romans 7 is talking about the end of the Torah. They assert that when Messiah came, we died to the Torah as if it were like a spouse who had died. Then they contend, since the Torah is dead, we are now free to be married to Messiah. How can the Torah be both dead to us and at the same time holy, righteous, and good? When Shaul writes, "We died to the law," Romans 7 verse 4, he is referring to the reality that we have ceased to relate to the Torah in our former legalistic manner. Having died to that thinking and behavior, we are now free to live a life of grace, expressing God's Torah through Messiah. What has changed is our relationship to the Torah. Before we were redeemed, the Torah condemned us for our sin and taught us about Messiah. If we attempted to follow the Torah or to participate in the Torah observant community, the Torah may also have helped to protect us until we reached the teacher. But when we met the teacher, the Messiah, everything changed. We died, Galatians 2 verses 19 and 20. In our new relationship with him came a new relationship to Torah as well. We can now confirm with Shaul that for us as believers, the Torah is holy, righteous, and good. The words of the Torah are now our life, Deuteronomy 32 verse 47. When we study Torah, we can learn a great deal about God himself and his eternal attributes. And when we practice Torah, we are practicing that which is holy, righteous, and good. We are also participating in our new life, the life of God. Life's built-in reminders. The Torah lifestyle is brilliantly designed by God himself according to his perfect knowledge of how we function as spiritual beings seated in Messiah in the heavenlies, yet living on the earth. We need to be reminded continually of this glorious truth because the cares of this world are always seeking to distract us from it. The Torah lifestyle was designed with built-in reminders of God's truths, helping us to remember our identity both as new creations in Messiah and as members of the redeemed and holy community. A Jewish reminder. There are several ways in which the Torah functions as a reminder. First, it reminds Jewish people what it means to be Jewish. Perhaps you are a Messianic Jew. Because of the excellent training in many fellowships on what it means to be Messianic, there is little need to define this concept here. But if we claim to be Messianic Jews, what does the Jewish part mean? Does being Jewish mean having an Israeli identification card or a membership in the local Jewish community center? What defines Jewishness? There is only one authoritative place where we can learn and be continually reminded of our biblical Jewishness. This is in the Torah. As Orthodox Israeli Rabbi Shlomo Riskin so aptly put it, quote, "A Jewishness without Torah is an impossibility, a term devoid of meaning," end of quote. Let us clarify. There is a difference between being a Jewish person and living out our Jewishness. One's birth and ancestry determine whether one is Jewish or not. But only the Torah can define what Jewishness means, how to live out our Jewish birth. Perhaps a slight change of terms may help to clarify the issue. The Bible says that Abraham was called a Hebrew. Although there is some difference of opinion, the word Hebrew most likely means one who has crossed over, from the root avar. God calls him a Hebrew because he crossed over from his former geographical area to reach the land of Canaan. But God also intends for us to learn that a Hebrew is one who has crossed over from his former life, in this case one of idolatry, to the new life into which God has called him. Knowing this may shed new light on the biblical reference to Abraham as our father. Literally, he is the father of all of his physical descendants, but he is also the father of all who have crossed over spiritually from darkness into the wonderful light of belief in the one true God as he has revealed himself. To be sure, the Brit Chadashah continues the biblical definition of being Jewish. Rav Shaul clearly states the Torah definition and clarifies it. In Romans 2, 28 and 29, he writes, quote, "For he is not a Jew who is one outwardly, neither is circumcision that which is outward in the flesh. But he is a Jew who is one inwardly, and circumcision is that which is of the heart, by the Spirit, not by the letter. And his praise is not from men, but from God." End of quote. In other words, he is not denying the fact that a Jewish person is one by physical birth. But, understanding our definition of a Hebrew, he says that real Jewishness, or being a Hebrew, involves being born that way, not just physically, but also spiritually, by the Spirit of God. The Torah, as well as the Brit Chadashah, adds meat to the definition, and reminds us of what a Hebrew looks like. There are other believers in Yeshua who were not born physical descendants of Abraham. Concerning these believers, we are told, quote, "Even so, Abraham believed God, and it was reckoned to him as righteousness. Therefore, be sure that it is those who are of faith who are the sons of Abraham. And the Scripture, foreseeing that God would justify the Gentiles by faith, preached the gospel beforehand to Abraham, saying, All the nations shall be blessed in you. So then, those who are of faith are blessed with Abraham, the believer. End of quote. Galatians 3, verses 6 through 9. Thus, in a spiritual sense, non-Jewish believers in Yeshua are also Hebrews, those who have crossed over like their spiritual father Abraham. It does not mean that they are Jewish people. It means that because they are both grafted into Israel and share in the faith of Israel, they are like their father Abraham, having crossed over into God's call for their life by trusting in the Messiah of Israel. For such, as well as the natural branches, Jewish people by birth, the Torah also serves as a book of reminders. Reminders of what? Reminders that we are a people of God, the called out ones, those who have crossed over